This is Comedy Potpourri. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
Today we're going to talk about Bruce Campbell. It's Campbell.
Yeah.
Everybody says Campbell, but it's Campbell.
I say Campbell, but that's just me. That's the way I run it together. Yeah, kid, whatever.
He's a year younger than me. He's born in 58, June 2258. He's still doing shows.
Oh, God. I think anybody who's a fan of Bruce Campbell will look for Bruce, regardless of what part of the movie he may be in, and just be absolutely thrilled. He's like, oh, sweet. We were just talking about it.
Yeah.
We were just talking about how many different movies that Sam Raimi, who's important in Campbell's life.
Well, they went to high school together. We mentioned that. They went to high school together. So they
also did a lot of thespian acting.
Yes.
As he puts it in one of his books and stuff, how to make love to Bruce Campbell, which is a hilarious book to read.
Also, The Chin.
Oh, Life Under the Chin's the life of a B-movie actor.
And he did two of those, didn't he?
It says he did two. I only read one.
Right.
But if Chins could kill, that is one of them, and it is probably one of my favorite reads because it introduces us to his lifelong friend Sam Raimi,
right,
and how they were acting in Michigan for a long time, and then they managed to make enough money to make this movie.
They made a 30 minute movie about the Evil Dead. It was an intro so they could sell it and get money.
Yeah.
On a Super 8.
Super 8.
That's a long time ago.
Yes, it is. in films and so on, anyway. That was a 1960s and 70s kind of thing, I believe.
He's a character actor that I would say he gets into his character very much.
I would say so. I think there are characters that are written very openly, and he fills in the gaps a lot of the time. And I'm sure other actors do too, but he's got such a magic to the way he puts it together.
Oh, he does.
And he infuses it with his own personality, the way he would act as one of these characters. It's kind of like when I was watching the TV show Burn Notice.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that ran for a really long time. Yeah, Sam Axe.
Yeah, Sam Axe.
I don't know where the last name comes from, but it's kind of hilarious when he says. But the way he is depicted is that he's a former Navy SEAL.
CIA.
And he got kind of ousted because he did something that he wasn't supposed to do, and it kind of basically just kind of marooned him in Miami. And so the only thing he does is drink a lot and carouse, and it always elicits the fact that he's got this new other girlfriend that he's hanging out with. And I say, hey, Mike, I need some money. I just need a little bit,
And he's always has a beer.
always. But it's the way he comes across is there's an earnest.
Well, before that, he did Jack of All Trades.
I got it. You got that on DVD.
Jack of All Trades. And then The County. What was the county?
Briscoe County.
Well, that was pretty good. I thought that was pretty. That was tongue-in-cheek. Definitely tongue-in-cheek.
Well, all of them are. I think that the way it comes out is that Briscoe County Jr. was his first foray into television.
Right.
And it, he didn't know anything about riding horses. What was he supposed to do? And he's got that horse of his. Terrible.
Oh, it's in here someplace. Yeah. I know it is. But we'll find it. So he did
Autocleus.
Autocleus in Hercules.
Yep.
The Legendary Journeys in Xena, Warrior Princess.
Now, at this particular time, Sam Raimi was looking for a project, but he wanted to go someplace else other than the States, so he found it fairly cheap to be filming over in New Zealand.
Right.
And this is just prior to all the stuff with the Weta Works and all the Lord of the Rings stuff that was being filmed over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot earlier. I mean, we're talking, what, about
10 years earlier.
Now, I got to tell you something. I've had a run-in with him.
What do you mean kind of run-in? What kind of run-in are you talking about?
I didn't
about?
Introduce myself, but I had to. I was listening. When I did pest control in the Portland airport.
Okay.
By the way, he lives in Oregon. I'm not going to tell you where, but he lives in Oregon.
Yep.
He's sitting there having a drink, and this guy comes up to him and starts talking. He goes, you know, I think the guy says, I teach karate. And he says, wow, the lady plays Xena. She must be she's probably a black belt. And he just looks forward like, and I look at him and he's like, we almost made eye contact. And I'm like, oh no, here we go. And all of a sudden he goes, really? He goes, yeah, with her moves and stuff. He goes, you know, this is television. He goes, what? He says, no. Part of that is we have stunt doubles. She knows nothing. And I'm like going, oh, he's telling this guy off. In a nice way. He was really nice. And the guy finally understood that, you know, it's
there's
TV.
A difference. It's a TV show.
It's a TV show, yeah.
There's only so much that an actual actor will emote on TV. You know, now, there are some actors like Tom Cruise who like to do their own stunts.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great.
Yeah.
Cruise is an outstanding individual, and he's in great physical health. I mean, come on, man. He puts me to shame, for sure.
It's that Scientology that does it to you.
All that orange juice he was drinking. It's all the vitamin C, you know.
It's all
C
in your,
for Cruise.
It's all in your head.
Sure. Convince yourself, pal. Manifest. But to Bruce's, he does have a very kind of coy sense of humor in some cases. I mean, it's like very matter of fact, but he, you know, and he can get, he knows how to read a room. He knows how to read people and the way he introduces himself. But there's always a smart alecky component to it as well. And that goes all the way back to his early days with Raimi. I'm sure that's how they became friends in the first place.
Right. Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, Raimi took a shot at acting too.
So Raimi, that's so funny. He's like, so in the shows, he always makes sure that Bruce gets in, like, part of the action. Like, he always, like, he says, yeah. I always get hit.
The Dreaded Dragoon. Which is the name of the character they plays in Jack of All Trades.
Yeah.
And it's like supposedly at the turn of the century, just as the founding fathers were creating the United States, he's part of it. And it shows, it's Jack. He shows him. There's this great intro song that showed up on CBS when the show first aired.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, this show is awesome. I can't wait to watch this. And some of it is so over the top. And his co-stars are great, but they can. It's a take all these different things. They even take like Lewis and Clark, which takes place literally 100 years after the founding of the founding fathers, and they throw them in there. Sure, because it's old, and we, you know, Americans don't know anything about old and
or history.
Yeah, or our history, and hey, we're doing it. We're doing it in New Zealand, so who cares? We got a story.
Which I got to tell you, okay, this is... I got to tell you that people in Europe, Canada, Australia, the other countries, know more about our history than we do.
Probably true. Isn't that a shame?
Okay, and also they said that the average American cannot pass the citizen test to become a citizen. Isn't that awful?
We don't need borders. Borders are already here. They're all in your head. Anyway, so I mean, Campbell goes through some great runs with Raimi initially. That car that you see constantly being used in the Spider-Man movies, in the Evil Dead, even in the latest version,
Ash
versus the Evil Dead.
Yes.
Oh, I love that show. I love that show. So over the top. And, of course, it has Lucy Lawless pop in there.
Right.
Right? And the Deadites trying to come back to Earth. And who else do they get to play Ash's dad? Oh, my God. Lee Majors.
Oh, my God.
The $6 million man.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like... Oh, and the way that Lee Majors plays that character is almost as bad a character as Ash is himself.
Well, we got last time we talked about Marvel and everything. They actually did a Marvel zombie and said had Ash Williams in there in the Army of Darkness. Marvel zombies versus Army of Darkness.
I've seen some adaptations, and then there is the Evil Dead or Ash versus the Evil Dead, and the depictions in the comic don't do the movie justice at all. It's like if you're going to do a comic, do it verbatim. Make the pictures and images look like
the person.
Well, yeah.
Well, you know what you're drawing, zombies and... Yeah,
zombies stuff, you can always go off a little bit and have artistic license. But the actual person, I mean, take a look at the Evil Dead, okay? The poster for the Evil Dead 2.
Oh, great, yeah.
You know, or Army of Darkness in particular is a great cover, right? It's got this great poster of him in this heroic upward pose. You're standing down below this pile of rock, and he's got the hot chick that's kind of down on the ground, wrapping her arms around his leg. It's a classic 70s
trope,
right?
It's great. It's great.
And
yeah.
And he's got his chainsaw in one hand and the shotgun in the other.
His boomstick.
Yeah, his boomstick, and his shirt's all ripped up, and it's like you got Army of Good, Bad, and Low on Gas, I think is one of the taglines on the poster. Fantastic thing. If the artists were in the comic adaptation were to pay attention to that more and use the script verbatim, you'd sell the story immediately.
Oh yeah,
you know. But whatever.
So he also directs,
yes,
produces, writes.
Yep.
One he did was one of his movies was The Man with the Screaming Brain.
I read the comic book actually. That comic was actually pretty good. Campbell has a really good working relationship with the guys from Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Mike Richardson. In fact, Mike Richardson helped fund and co-produce My Name is Bruce.
Oh, wow.
Which I have.
Yeah?
Because it's Bruce Campbell. And the people think, like the characters, the guy that you were just talking about, how he has to tell me, you know it's television, right, kid?
Right.
He does the same thing. Except he's lampooning himself. So he's taking the most outrageous aspects of the way people perceive him in real life, playing this over-the-top character, and it's just like... And he's filming it. It was hilarious, and also it sounded like a hellish thing for him because the amount of money that he thought he was saving because it was being filmed on his ranch,
yeah,
down in southern Oregon.
Right.
There was a bunch of problems with a bunch of bees or wasps nest that got out.
Is that the one with the man with the screaming brain?
No. This is My Name is Bruce.
Oh.
And so he was directing it. And I was listening to the background of Mike Richardson and Bruce Campbell actually watching the movie together.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually some really cool spots in the movie. Some of it's a little what I would call throwaway. But, you know, he's filling in the gaps in between these big proponents of... Like these evil spirits that were brought over and were trapped during the when the Chinese were being brought over to the United States to do the trains and so on.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah,
he uses that little bit of a trope. It's like almost like a little bit of Kung Fu meets Bruce Campbell.
That's funny.
Oh,
I guess on The Man with Screaming Brain, he actually had to carry food with him because of their wild animals.
Oh, yeah.
So he'd throw food out so they wouldn't bother him. Wow.
That storyline alone was just wild. But I have to say that probably the best non-Ash character is him playing Elvis Presley.
Oh.
Now, if anybody's ever seen this particular movie, it came out, I forget exactly when, Bubba Hotep. And the way he does the Elvis impersonation, and he actually went to the guys who actually made the costumes for Elvis and got himself a costume made by the same people.
That's right, Mama.
That's right. The same guy who also made the costumes for Evel Knievel.
Oh, yes. It looked just like an Evel Knievel.
How could you not say that?
Because he was skinny. He had a belly on him, but that's it. That was
I like that when he was doing those fake kung fu moves, since we were talking about that. and he's like breaks his hip, falling into the audience or something like that. And it's just like, Sebastian Haft.
So what happened, that movie is great because what happens is it's when he's older and he's in a nursing home. He's not dead, but he wears his outfit.
Yeah. Elvis never really died. He was living in Shady Rest. And the beginning of the movie is hilarious to begin with, too, because the guys are just removing one of the people who had just passed away, and they just kind of drop the corpse, trying to get it in the car. Mr. Haft!
And we got to tell the other part of this movie, though.
What?
There's three parts. Okay, there's Bruce, there's...
Oh, Ozzie Davis.
Or Ozzie Davis, sorry.
You got me on that one.
Ozzie Davis.
Ozzie Davis, who plays JFK.
And tell him why he's JFK.
All right, so the way JFK comes across, Jack, played by Ozzie Davis, he said, "They put a sandbag in the back of my head and dyed me black." They dyed him black. It's like, what? And he's got, and the thing is that he has all these setups around his room about the assassination of JFK,
right.
and he wheels around an electric chair and stuff like that. But he's pretty awesome in that role.
It's
actually
pretty funny. So he's actually JFK.
Yep.
And then there's Elvis. And then what happens is, as this Egyptian thing going to the museum's going, it has a mummy and everything. And I think it hits a bump or something and it falls out.
Well, no. So what ends up happening in the story? So in 1957. This bus with this mummy on board, of a cursed mummy, by the
yes.
way, right, has been touring around Texas, where Shady Rest is supposed to be at. And during a storm, the bus goes over has a major accident, goes in, and goes into the river.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And it's down below Shady Rest, but the bus is missing for decades, and you know, it's only until much later in the movie you find out the bus is still down there, and somehow this Egyptian mummy comes back to life and starts sucking the souls out of their asshole. It's an asshole sucker. and this is where JFK comes out and he starts talking about it, because they're finding weak souls, you know, because people are about ready to pass on.
Right.
And this mummy is preying on them for life energy. And
yeah, the Shady Rest.
Yeah, and the effects of him coming down the hallway, walking past him. I think one of the best lines was when he's got like a small little heater in his room, and there's a giant beetle or scarab that gets into his room.
Yes.
It's like, You got a real problem here. Got a real big bad bug problem around here. And the way he catches it in the bedpan.
Yes.
And the music that goes to it, and when the beetle's flying around from the beetle's point of view. It's like the bug crops up over one shoulder and then over the other. It's like, it's so comical, but so hilarious.
It is a great movie. I try to recommend it to my friends, and they go, "What?" I'm going, "Oh, no, no, you have to see it, because just, I mean, Bruce is great in that movie."
Don Cariselli, who wrote this, I think he wrote part of the story and he directed it, who'd also done The Phantasm, I think that's his
yes.
most well-known
okay,
horror
yeah.
movie. Unfortunately, there, I guess during the filming of the movie, the both actor and director had a parting of ways. So there must have been some creative differences taking place within the movie, towards the end of the movie. And even though people fondly remember Bubba Hotep, there is definitely behind-the-scenes stuff that makes it impossible for another movie to ever be made.
Well, that's, yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because seriously, there could have been other movies made with both JFK and Elvis.
That would be great.
Greatest team up ever. Oh yeah.
Okay, Jack. Uh-huh. So all you got to do is, what was his name? Johnny
Which movie?
The cartoon.
Uh-huh. Johnny Bravo?
Johnny Bravo. Uh-huh.
Well, he does a lot of voice acting too, so yeah. I can see that taking place.
So let's talk about the obvious movies.
The one that's actually the one in the same.
It's just got
the number two added to the
end to of it or the other added.
Okay, so the very first movie, The Evil Dead.
Okay. Well, no.
Oh yeah.
Into the Woods.
If you're talking that short you're talking about, that's an intro.
Wasn't Into the Woods the start of that? Where he's in the cabin, or in the cabin in the woods?
There's... Raimi's movie takes a lot from another movie called Equinox. Okay. That has a similar setup. Okay, and Equinox was done over the period of, like, literally 4 years to put this thing together. It also has stop-motion animation in it, too, by the way. But it always has this small cabin in the woods that teenagers are going up to. And in that movie, people get transported into like some sort of weird time portal, and they're attacked by like primeval demons or something.
Right.
I don't know how a demon would be primeval, but whatever.
Doesn't he find a book in that movie or something? Isn't that what
they do find? They do find a book. Now, in the original Evil Dead, they go up to this professor's place that the professor they know, and apparently he's been doing some research out there, and he's been working on this book of the Necronomicon de Mortis or something like that, right? The Necronomicon, which is a tie-in to a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stuff, right?
Right.
But this book is made of human skin and flesh. And it's got this really twisted-looking face on the front, which actually becomes its own character in the series after a while, which is kind of hilarious. The movie has Ash being possessed at the very tail end of the movie. Okay? And it's not until the second one that the whole comedic chop thing really comes into play. And the second movie, called, surprisingly enough, Evil Dead 2. Because movies back in the late 70s and early 80s always had something like that. Maniac Cop.
Yeah.
1 and 2.
Oh, he did. That's him.
Yeah, that's him. So he's doing these roles, and Raimi and crew decide to basically retell the first movie again, but with a little bit of comedy to it. And it's like in the second movie, you hear him talking about, it's like, my hand got hurt and my hand went bad. And he had to chop it off. So he had to chop off his hand with a chainsaw. And it's just, and it was at that point, you knew the movie was just so over the top. It's like, just go with it. Go with it.
Oh, yeah.
Gore fest galore. And Campbell says in a couple of his books, like, you know, blood mixed with Knox gel, or is it red dye with Knox gel, looks great on screen. It's insane to get out of your clothing. It was everywhere. Never do that again. Or Karo syrup. That's
Karo syrup.
Karo syrup. And it's just like, oh.
That's what they used to use originally, is Karo syrup with red colored
food coloring. Food to coloring. It. Yeah, to get that kind of drippy kind of a look, but you can never get it out. Oh, God.
So he did a lot of these movies, and then when he had the good part is when he's fighting himself and his little selves.
In the Army of Darkness. And actually, in a couple of the credits, actually, in the movie I saw it in, at the art house I saw it in Eugene, had Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it says, and it shows him being pulled in along with the car through a, yes, a time portal.
Right.
To medieval. As I'm trying to, why is it medieval? I don't get it. But okay, I'll just go with it. And it shows him falling out of this portal and the car lands right beside him. And then they're attacked by some
medieval guys.
Yet. Yeah. And he gets put in the chains and he's only got a stump. And it's the way he's got to walk around with this stuff, and his arms obviously up, hidden and stuff like that in the wood or fake wood. It's her, and they're snapping whips, and he's doing that slow motion, like kind of thing. And they're taken to deal with a bunch of people, and because he's a stranger, they think, oh, there's no way. There's no way you're not possessed by the devil or something like
you're
that.
You're one of them.
Yeah, and what do they have? They have this gigantic pit down below, right? And they just throw him in the water and stuff. And it's like, and then he gets attacked, and it's like, nope, not having that.
And isn't that that witch comes after? Yeah. Isn't it the girl turns into a witch? That's part of the whole thing.
Well, she does later.
Possessed or something like that.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
So his famous line in the whole movie is,
"This is my boomstick." You can get it at S-Mart. Shop Smart. S-Mart.
That's at the end of the movie. He has it all the time.
Yeah, I know. If any of you primitive screwheads even thinks about it. And the funny thing is that he gets in the back of his car, he ends up finding all these science books, right? On how to make stuff. So he starts making, first off, he makes his own hand, and he's already still got the chainsaw that can reattach to it and takes the hand off and puts that. And groovy is one of his
yes.
favorites.
Oh, yeah.
The way he says it is perfect. And so he's got this, he's got his boomstick. But now he's got to say the sacred words, which is?
I don't remember that, no.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God, I can't remember.
It is from one of the movies we were talking about recently. Actually, yeah.
I can't remember it.
It's from a 1950s sci-fi movie.
Oh, God.
Klaatu.
Oh.
Murata. He sneezes. Yeah, see? I said the words. And that's where the little ones come out.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, my God. He's just,
and they start attacking him. Yep. Yeah.
Mr. Little Goody Two-Shoes, Goody Two-Shoes. Goody Shoes. Punching himself, getting into a fight. When he splits, and it was just like,
Two heads. That it splits, and there's like, all of a sudden, there's two heads looking at each other. And then it just keeps on splitting. Yeah.
And it keeps splitting until there's actually just two individuals there. I just go with it. Just go.
Well, it's a bloody, funny, I hate to say stupid, because stupid you wouldn't watch it, but it's funny. A dark funny.
I call it a medieval comedy romp. That's just because everything about it is so over the top, and it's like, but like so many movies of the time when that was coming out. Because Schwarzenegger had just come out with Conan the Barbarian, and Conan the Destroyer was just on the verge of coming out. Every freaking person in Hollywood said, well, geez, if we can get Arnold to do that, maybe we can get ourselves a couple of other bodybuilders to do that barbarian-esque type thing. And,
yeah.
And then there were other people, like David Carradine had done a movie called The Sword and the Sorcerer. And then all the sci-fi or fantasy movies that were coming out at the time.
The Sword and the Sorcerer, that was with that... that was really... Actually, at that time, that was a great movie.
Carradine is dealing with a... Then there's also Hawk the Slayer.
Oh.
You know? And you got a... what's the guy who was on the Ripley's Believe It or Not? Jack Palance.
Jack Palance.
He plays the villain on that one.
By the way, he did... Mr. Campbell did do Ripley, believe it or not. for a while.
The talented Mr. Ripley?
No. Which Ripley's Ripley Believe It or Not.
He did?
Yeah.
You got me on that.
It's on the TV thing. He also played in one of your favorite shows.
Well, the X-Files.
Yes.
I know. I actually watched that, which is kind of hilarious because he's actually a demon.
He does a lot of voice acting, and he does a lot of games now. He's done a lot of games, voice acting. He was actually Rod Torque, Redline in Cars 2. So, not something we watch. My Life as a Teenage Robot. He was in The Ant Bully. Lobster Johnson in Hellboy.
Oh, I know that character.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a supporting character in the comic books.
Yeah.
He's supposedly a kind of a Batman / Shadow kind of character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's got this claw that's on the palm of his hand, so every time that he actually attack somebody, that claws burn into their forehead.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Oh, my gosh.
It's also, I think, also mirrors a comic character called the Phantom back in the 1930s and 40s. It's actually
real popular character. He tried to, but Billy Zane got it?
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
The Phantom.
Yeah.
Billy, the movie, if you remember, you ever see it with Billy Zane?
I've seen parts of it, yes.
But Campbell was up for it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, man.
But okay. They went with, because of certain things, they didn't think he was ready for it, and then they gave it to Billy.
Oh, man.
See, he could have been in Titanic.
I don't know if he could have played that one. Billy Zane's just, he's a wild actor in his own right, too.
Oh, he is. Oh.
The first time I ever saw him was in Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Audrey Horne's got a heart on for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's on, oh, you're so dreamy. And it's like, oh, stop talking about Billy Zane right now.
Oh,
he can be a real creeper when he wants.
So I gotta say something about the Evil Dead movies. It says Army of Darkness. This is the Rotten Tomato score. Army of Darkness got 68. Evil Dead got 63, which I think it should be higher. But the rest, the Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Evil Dead Rise, are like in the mid 80s, which is really good for Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
I mean so that tells you that they're worth watching.
If you want to believe that aggregate, I don't always go by Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic or something like that. Sometimes they seem to be skewed. But there's some other movies that should be mentioned that he was in as well. We've already mentioned Bubba Hotep, Maniac Cops 1 and 2, My Name is Bruce. But he was also in smaller roles that kept him busy.
A lot of them.
Well, such as the Coen Brothers' The Hudsucker Proxy, Michael Crichton's The Adaptation of Congo. He was also in McHale's Navy.
I've seen that. That was great.
He plays one of the better characters opposite of a guy that was married to Roseanne Barr.
Oh, yeah. Okay. His name's Tom.
Yeah. His first name is Tom.
First name Tom.
Just go with it. Obviously not a...
Hudsucker Proxy was a really good...
But he was also in Escape from Los Angeles, which I saw on my birthday.
Oh.
It's an uncredited role, though.
But, oh my gosh, his makeup in that, it looks really, I mean, you can't tell it's him, actually.
Actually, I could right off the top.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, I know Bruce. And then he was in Jim Carrey's the movie The Majestic and Disney's movie Sky High, which I do remember.
He was the, are you a hero or a sidekick?
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, which I thought was, like, that's a pretty good role for him playing the coach. Then he was also doing the voice acting in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Right.
He plays in Cars 2 as a supporting role.
In Oz, and he was in Oz the Great and Powerful.
Which
part? He was like the guard.
Oh, you know what? I could totally see him doing that because Raimi was doing it. That's actually a decent movie prior to that whole thing. Looks like there was another
thing. My god, I gotta watch Black Friday. Or 18 and a half. He's President Richard Nixon.
Oh, that should be hilarious.
Oh, that'd be good.
But he was in a number of other things, but you know, he the TV shows, like we've already mentioned, Briscoe County Jr. was his first, I think his real first foray into it. He didn't know how to ride a horse, but he had to learn. Or actually, I think, no, that actually happened on Army of Darkness, because he had to ride a horse. And it's like, he doesn't ride horses at all. But, you know, that's okay. He makes it look good. And he got a chance to act with some really great actors, though, too. John Astin, initially. It was one of the other actors he worked on with that show. And then when he went on to do Jack of All Trades, then he went back into the movie stuff. So
he was also in Duck Dodgers. He played Pork Pigler. I love that. I'm playing Pork Pigler. Oh, and then it says here that to be announced, Highly Functional is a movie that's being made. Also, in our little information book I have, or papers, it says that they're going to make another.
They're going to make another?
They're going to make another Evil Dead, yes.
Now, is this going to be a continuation?
They said a continuation.
It has to be a continuation because they actually tried to do the Evil Dead as more of a serious horror movie.
Yeah.
And Raimi was behind the production of it. And it was a very much more serious rendition of it. But at the very tail end of that movie, after all the credits, Bruce Campbell says, "Groovy." And he actually shows up on the screen.
Oh.
And it's just like, oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Come on. And I think this was the introduction. So if the movie did well, and the franchise could get off the ground again, they could do it. And so they went to, I think it was FX that series is on. Series ran for 3 seasons. And they're like 10 to 12 episodes each. They picks up immediately where it left off.
The makeup in that show is great. If you're into the special effects of makeup, how the prosthetics and everything, it's not AI. It looks really good.
Let's see, I'm trying to see here.
He was an Impractical Joke in. It was in Impractical Jokers as himself.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, I missed that one. That would have been great. Oh, and he's the demon on voice in one episode of Invincible.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay,
I'll have to take a look for that one.
What else is there?
There's a Bruce Campbell Horror Film Festival.
Yes.
Film festival is narrated and organized by Campbell, which was held in the Marvino Theater in Rosemont, Illinois. The first festival was originally from August 21st to 25th in 2014, presented by Wizard World as part of the Chicago Comic Con. Second festival was in August 20th through the 23rd in 2015 with guests Tom Holland and Eli Roth.
Ooh.
The third one took place over 4 days in August of 2016. Main event people was Sam Raimi, Robert Tappert, and Doug Benson. Tappert and Benson, I believe, are both producers on a couple of the shows that he was on TV with at the time, so... He is currently married. This is his second marriage, I believe.
Right, it's his second marriage.
And her name is, I believe her name is Ida. And he talks about her, and she was a stunt woman, from what I understand.
They met on
Mind Warp.
Yeah, there you go.
And they've been living here in Oregon ever since. It says in his personal life that Campbell is a Kentucky colonel. Now, this has been left up to some...
Yes!
What does that mean exactly? What is a Kentucky colonel?
He dresses up like the colonel and gives out chicken.
I've got my secret recipes. It's in the secret sauce. You know what? You know who I'm going to ask about that? I'm going to ask Woody about that.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a friend of ours who's from Kentucky, and he has a very deep Southern accent, but probably one of the smartest men you could ever talk to. but he would tell you that his two best friends were a rock and a dirt clod.
He also did, which is was done, I think it done at Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
Last Fan Standing, and it's on Amazon Prime, and there's only 10 episodes, but it's pretty funny, and he makes, you know, these guys are getting up there, and they know that, you know, he's going to make fun of them if they screw up.
Oh, totally will. Because unless you've got all this stuff memorized, and he knows his stuff. I mean, he has got so much stuff memorized, but he plays it. He plays with them when he's doing that kind
of
thing.
Oh, yeah, he does.
All the time. So I'm looking at this. So I remember there's the movie called Moontrap with Walter Koenig from Star Trek.
Oh, yes.
They play a couple of space shuttle astronauts, and they go to the moon, and they find this alien sarcophagus.
Oh, no.
Or something like that, right? In Darkman.
Oh, yeah.
He plays the end in the end. He doesn't actually have any speaking roles, but he's out in the crowd, and he looks over his shoulder at the camera and then disappears into the crowd.
Right.
And I had forgotten that was a Raimi movie, but now I totally see it.
Which means that, you know, that Darkman was not dead.
That is correct.
Oh, he did, what was the other one? The vampire one.
Oh.
Sundown. Vampires in Retreat.
He's got a link. I mean, he's always got, it looks like almost every single year, he's had at least one starring role.
From 1977.
Yeah, I mean, and even though there's small cameo appearances,
well,
he's still there.
Working.
He's still working.
Yeah.
Even for the Coen brothers, he does an uncredited cameo in Lady Killers.
Is that the one with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they keep, every person he kills off, he just throws in the river. It stops by. It shows the van stop. Yeah, that was a funny movie to do.
There's some events coming up. I'm going to let you know. May 24th and 25th of 2025 at the Irvington Convention Center, Irvington, Texas. There's the, I think it's a movie thing going on. It has Bruce Campbell, Xena, just Bruce Campbell. And then July 5th and 6th of 2025, Denver, Colorado, is Bruce Campbell at the Fan Expo. These are fan expos. I don't know if it's October 11th and 12th, if it's probably this year. He's going to be, where is this at? In St. Louis. Now, there's something that I showed Alan here, and I'll let him talk about this because it's kind of cool.
Oh, okay. So we're talking this
both
one
those,
or,
yeah.
or the two of them here.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one. Oh, hold on. I see something that just caught my attention that I would probably buy. It's from Funko. There's an Army of Darkness Funko Pop, which has got Ash with a chainsaw and everything. And I have a couple of those in my house right now.
Really?
Oh yeah, I got a couple. Most of them are Guardians of the Galaxy, but I got a couple separate ones like the Martian Manhunter and Magic from the Marvel Universe. So pretty cool. Okay, so the first one that's listed here is a political thriller novella by Campbell, and it's an epic audio performance, an audiobook called Citizen Alex, Let Freedom Ring.
He is actually doing the audio in that.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And it'd be really interesting to pick that up because he does have such a keen sense of humor with any of his books. I mean, it should be mentioned that the books that he has done, If Chins Could Kill, The Life of a B-Movie Actor, and Make Love, The Bruce Campbell Way.
Yeah.
The persona of that particular character comes right off the old Spice commercials, too, that he did.
I remember those.
Those are hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Old Spice. Yeah, I mean, he plays it like he's this classic big game hunter or something like that. That would be, if somebody would make a role with him like that, he could totally play it. Oh, yeah, this right here, don't worry about it. Yeah, I got this line, he's coming at me pretty hard, you know. But I brought up my giant elephant gun and popped him one. Now he's mounted on the side of my wall. Go figure.
Oh, but, yes. He does say that. Go figure.
Sorry, there's a little Bruce in everybody.
Yes, there is.
There's like there's a little bit of Elvis in everyone, except Michael J. Fox. He's got no Elvis in him at all. He's got the anti-Elvis.
Yes, he does.
According to Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper. Okay, so there's a comic book that kind of caught my attention here, and Paul's got it highlighted.
And it's a DC
horror title called Sergeant Rock versus the Army of the Dead. Army of the Dead, written by Bruce Campbell, now available. And it's just like, oh, if it was drawn by Joe Kubert or one of his sons, Andy or Alex Kubert, oh, it would be such a fantastic read. Oh, now I got to go back. Man, I was just at one of our local comic book shops, the Cosmic Monkey, picking up some new books today, and I was just like, I should have asked him for it. If I had seen this before, Paul, damn you.
Well, I might go out to...
Things from Another World?
Yeah, Things from Another World. That's actually Things from Another World. But it's right by the comic place.
Dark Horse? Out in Milwaukee?
Yes.
Oh. I got to go be heading down there anyway this next week anyway.
Okay. So I got to tell you. They're in... It's called Milwaukee, Oregon. And it's a small little town you walk through. It's actually not very far. It's right next to Portland. It's pretty much part of Portland. But when you walk down there, their office is there, and they have Predator, a full-size Predator, Alien. I mean, they have everything on the outside, and it's so cool.
Dark Horse really put themselves on the map. They were trying to be initially their own comic book company during their own individual characters and stuff like that. But it wasn't until they started licensing that they started to make some names for themselves. And as they did, their comic book company grew, and it became not just Dark Horse Comics, but also became Dark Horse Entertainment. So Mike Richardson, who's the president of the company, really started to kind of make a move there. And with these properties, the comics started to get more popular and brought in a lot of big name creatives in DC and Marvel, and brought them into under the auspice of Dark Horse, and they started doing their own creator owned stuff, which is where Hellboy comes from,
right?
And Frank Miller's Sin City.
So I got a question.
Sure.
Did they do anything with Evil Dead?
No, that's the odd thing about
it. They should have, because the way they present it and they draw and the art would be perfect for it.
I think you'd have to find a really, again, like that one comic that we were talking about.
Yeah.
I think if it had been done by Dark Horse, it would have had a different slant on it because of the connection between Richardson and Campbell to begin with.
Right.
And I think it could have been a really good thing. Dark Horse has produced some okay movies. I mean, The Mask, I think the first one was probably lauded as probably a pretty good one. They were still tied into a little bit of the movies with Hellboy and with the Sin City stuff that was coming out from both Robert Rodriguez and Guillermo del Toro with the Dimension films and so on. But I would love to see some extended stuff with like Ash versus the Evil Dead, the TV series, leaves on a cliffhanger. It's like, come on.
Finish it off with either comics or something. So where it ends, make the movie.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to hear what he would have to say about Ellen, the TV show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love, I mean, if this ever gets to Bruce, just to let you know, we would love just to sit down and have a beer with you, and we'll buy.
Yeah, you know, just make your way up to the top part of Oregon and...
When you fly around, you got to come out of Portland anyway, so, hey.
I mean, I think it would be interesting just to hang out with him just as a person, not just as an actor. I think in a lot of cases, there is always this... The fanboy gets the better of everybody, and anybody who's in that genre or something like that, can tell immediately. So they immediately put their personal shields up and it's like, yeah, whatever, kid.
Yeah. Well, kid. When I saw him at the airport, I was thinking, first thing I thought, God, I'd like to get his autograph. I'm going, Paul, he just got off a plane. He's having a drink. Leave the man alone. And that's the first thing. That's what it came to me. Leave him alone. Let him enjoy himself.
Yeah. That's sort of the reason why when I used to go to comic book shows and stuff like that, there's always people who, like him or some famous writer or artist that would get like, oh my God, it's this person here. Ah, and they go like, just relax, guys. Yeah. Let them do their thing. They're just people.
Right.
They're
actors. They're doing their profession.
Performers and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, that's what they get paid for. Are they out in the public eye and the popular culture? Yes, they definitely are. But always keep in mind that they're just like you and I sitting across the room having a beer and a burger or something like that, and they're just people.
I think I would like to take him sometime. It'd be fun to Evil Dead the musical. You can sit there and make comments.
The greatest example I have is I had a friend of mine. I told him that I go to a bar and there's a popular author that comes in there.
Right.
That comes in there all the time. But I don't bug him about it because I kind of like the idea that, you know, I kind of like hobnobbing with this, but this is a regular haunt of mine. And when I mentioned this to a friend of mine and who the author was, he's like, you should totally call me. And I was like, why? Well, because I'm one of his biggest fans. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
No, he's there to relax.
Yeah. You know, he's got his own life. He's coming in.
Yeah.
He knows one of the bartenders really well and comes in with his dog and his partner, and they come in and they give a burger for the dog and stuff, which is hilarious. And then they take off. And that's it.
I've done this before, is where I've been in like the airports, and there's actually famous musicians, and I just like, okay, cool, you know, like Hall & Oates. They were sitting, we were waiting for a plane, and his whole crew was there and everything. It was like, okay, cool, you know. I was just watching like, hey, that's Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be really cool just to hang out with people and just get to talk to them. You know, it's like, hey, man, great show or whatever.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And leave it at that. I've met people like that. There's a great couple of artists that I just gobbled up all their work as much as I could that I could afford. Like this guy by the name of Bernie Wrightson, who originally created the Swamp Thing, or
right,
the artist of it, right? There was nobody in his line down in San Diego. But one of the biggest comic book shows ever. Guy who's helped create some of the most iconic-looking characters that you could think of. And there's nobody in line to see him, right? So I just walked right up and started talking.
Hey, how you doing?
You know, and just asked him a point. I did ask him a fairly pointed question because, I love your style. I loved your artwork, but I have noticed that there's been a change in your style of artistry. And it's just like, how did that even happen? You know, because it seems like it's a little more, for lack of a better term, and I'm sorry to say this, but it looks a little more blocky when I look at the work.
Right.
And he said, well, there's a couple of things. One is age. Disease is another, you know.
Yeah.
And accidents. You know, he broke his arm. So he couldn't hold his brush and his pen the way he used to when he was in his younger days. And that made perfect sense to him. And I thanked him for his time. And, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to meet again at some point. And I did get that chance. So I had a chance to talk to him personally one-on-one with another writer-artist by the name of Jim Starlin. And this is the guy who created Thanos.
Yeah.
And oof, off to the races there.
You know, that's not as a stand-in or a, as they call them, we talked about that phrase, a shimp.
Oh yeah.
that's a kind of a cameo type of thing.
There's another name for it too, because if you know where the name shimp comes from, it's like, go and watch Three Stooges and you'll understand.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a play on words between him and Raimi enough times, because that says like, oh, I'm going to shimp.
Yes. Yeah.
You're going to be a stooge. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
God.
Now, I think one of the questions that I would, if we just sat down and stuff, and we're just talking and stuff, when you do comedy, it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
As trying to be serious but being comedic, it's not easy. Because the timing is different.
Timing is in comedy is always, it's the way you deliver something. You've got to be funny. There are serious actors that can pull off comedic roles. For example, it's going to be really interesting to see how Liam Neeson plays Frank Drebin Jr.
Right.
Now, Neeson's always wanted to do comedy, but he knows he's got this serious side of the role that is that perception, right? It's like, I have a certain set of skills. I mean, it's like, all right, I've seen the movie Taken. I understand it. I get it. And there's been two sequels to it. Great.
It's just when he says, Frank Drebin, police squad.
That's all for you, Dad. And he's got that, but you know, he's got great acting chops, and for him to do that comedic bit is going to be really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
To see. But for a person like Campbell, who's been doing it for years, you know, nonstop. I mean, I think everybody expects that there's going to be something he's going to say that's going to be. They want him to say something that's on par with like this is my boomstick kind
of
moment. Which got a huge laugh in the audience when I saw the movie, and it's part of the popular culture. And when you're talking about Bruce Campbell, you can't not say that.
So this is interesting because now he has cult movies.
Yes,
I mean just not that one, several of them. I would say as a actor, he's in his own. How would you say that? He's his own.
He's his own genre, actually.
Right. Yeah.
The Bruce Campbell genre. TM Alan Bennett, 2023. but I think in a lot of cases, I think he has created his own, for lack of the term cult of personality, which I think that's a weird phrasing. He has his own specific kind of genre. And if people follow that, they know. Oh, that's a Campbellism or something like that. Or Campbell. I can't say it.
Campbell.
Say it.
Campbell.
Campbell. Can't say it.
Just say Bruce.
Bruce. Sorry, BC. Can't do it, buddy. But it is true. I would love to just have a conversation with him. Just kind of kick back and just say, hey, man. If you had... this kind of a project being pitched to you, would you think about it? And you know, or you know, if you were to do, if you wanted to do your own thing, what would that kind of story be?
If
you had an unlimited amount of money to be able to make a movie, what would it be like?
Would you make?
Yeah, and you know, because I want to challenge him to come up with something and see what he would say. You know, as far as like what grandiose storyline he could have, like. Do you want to make your version of like a Citizen Kane? I mean, you've already got a book called Citizen Alex. Would that be an adaptation to that or something? I have yet to hear this book.
Right.
But I'm still looking at the Funko, so I think I'm going to...
Or a timepiece.
Something like
that. You
know, that. Yeah,
like the mid-century or something like that. Yeah.
Or would you want to lean heavy into the comedic stuff, and who would be your A-team list of people to draw upon? Would you want to revisit Briscoe County Jr. again? Because it sounded to me like you really like that, at least listening to the commentary that I'm hearing on DVDs. I love Jack of All Trades. I think that was a too short a show, unfortunately, but I loved the concept. It was fun to watch, even though it was purely... Oh... anachronistic. You know, it totally was. But yeah, I would love to see something like that. I would love to see him. And if somebody were to approach him with an actual serious role, would you do it? It's like, and the reason why I say this is like, I could see him stepping in and doing a serious role, like a, say, like the you tapped him to do like a an episode of Star Trek or something like
right.
that. And one of these,
which I'm surprised he's not has.
I know. But I could see him playing like an admiral or a captain of another ship.
Right.
That has to deal with 7 to 9. And I was like, oh, yeah. 7 to 9, the Borg, huh? I know about you guys.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. And have that same, a different take on that whole scenario, because that story of Wolf 359 and DS9 and Next Generation has had repercussions for decades now. It even shows up in the recent series of Picard Season 3, which is really good, by the way.
So we're going to get towards the end, but I want to say is recap this. He is definitely a character actor. He has a lot of... His chops are really good. If that's an acting thing, so chops.
What do you mean, chops?
Chops is like how he acts. You know, his the way he talks, the way he presents himself, chops.
He definitely fills the B-roll movie stuff. He's right up there with Richard Carlson and Rex Reason and Jeff Morrow.
Oh.
As far as the actors, he's got that classic look. And I think he can pull that off really well.
There you go. A remake of some of those 50 movies.
Oh, man. Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be really awesome.
So all I got to say is we wish you well, Bruce. Someday if we see you, we'd like to talk to you. And this is Comedy Potpourri, and I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And goodbye.
Thanks.